The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Therapy Suite. I'm Duncan Ellison, a therapeutic counsellor with a focus on positive mental health. This week in the headlines, self-harm hospital admissions for girls under 18 are increasing, and climate change could be contributing to suicides. These stories and more. Puneet Singh shares her views, and I'll be looking into why self-care when raising a family is vital. If good mental health matters to you, then this is a show not to be missed. So join me, Duncan Ellison, as we open the doors to the Therapy Suite, only on UK Health Radio. Welcome to another Therapy Suite, exclusive to UK Health Radio. It's a packed show this week, so let's start with the news making the headlines. Hospital admissions of girls under the age of 18 relating to self-harm have nearly doubled in 20 years, according to new NHS figures that show that 13,463 people were treated last year compared to just 7,327 in 1997. Emotional signs that could indicate a child may self-harm or may be at risk of self-harming can include depression, tearfulness and low motivation, sudden weight loss or gain, drinking or drug taking and withdrawn behaviour. It's good to talk, according to the NSPCC. Opening up a conversation with a teenager that you think might be self-harming or at risk of self-harm could be a good starting point. Also in the news, climate change has been linked with increased suicide rates as extreme heat profoundly affects the human mind. Climate change is likely to cause thousands of additional suicides in the coming decades as the Earth's temperature soars, according to a new study. Global warming has already been implicated in the spread of diseases ranging from malaria to heart attacks, but its impact on mental health is less clear-cut. Researchers examining the implications of a warming world for public health have found a worrying link between rising temperatures and declining mental health. To support their conclusions, the scientists found that higher monthly temperatures were also associated with an increased use of depressive language, such as lonely and suicidal, on social media. Young women are 51% more likely than their mothers to experience depression and anxiety during pregnancy, a new study suggests. This may be linked to changing work roles and feelings that career or personal ambitions may now be harder to reach, researchers claim. A unique project following women during their pregnancy in the 1990s, and now their daughters as they become mothers, has unearthed a worrying increase in mental health problems between the generations. One quarter of women who became pregnant before the age of 24 today exhibit high depressive symptoms compared to 17% in the original group, the team from the University of Bristol have found. And finally, a high-fibre diet may help relieve stress and anxiety, a new report suggests. But medical professionals have been quick to point out we have a tendency to seek short-term pleasure, such as comfort eating, drinking or smoking, when feeling stressed. Dietitians have been working with mental health professionals, and the conclusion is, despite enjoying a better diet than previous generations, we're still not getting enough of the rough stuff. Most people do not eat fibre, so eating the recommended amount is a good idea, but there is no guarantee that doing so will lower your stress levels. A leading researcher said, "Whilst the research is positive, at the moment we mustn't believe a high fibre diet will have a huge impact on stress levels. We can, however, conclude that a healthy diet may make us feel better internally, which should help a positive mindset." Really interesting news stories this week. Are there any you can relate to? Let's take a deeper look at these, and we'll start with the story of hospital admissions. We heard in the headlines that hospital admissions of girls under the age of 18 related to self-harm have nearly doubled in 20 years, according to new NHS figures that show 13,463 girls were treated last year compared with just 7,327 in 1997. Within that figure, there has been an almost tenfold increase in attempts of substance overdose. If you are concerned that a teenager may be at risk of self-harm, here's what you can do. Know the warning signs. Self-harm can be both physical and emotional, with signs of physical abuse including cuts, bruises and burns, as well as bald patches from pulling out hair. But teenagers may stay covered up in long-sleeve clothes, even when it's really hot outside, in order to hide their scars. Emotional signs that could indicate a child may self-harm, or may be at risk of self-harming, can include depression, tearfulness and low motivation, sudden weight loss or gain, drinking or drug-taking, and withdrawn behaviour. According to the NSPCC, it's good to talk. Opening up a conversation with a teenager that you think may be self-harming or at risk of self-harm could be a good starting point. The charity recommends it's important to think about where and how to talk so children will listen and to create an environment that is neutral and calm. For example, consider prompting a conversation where siblings can't overhear or in a relaxed setting, such as on a walk, in the car, or on a bike ride. Striking a balance is also key. Opening up a conversation too forcefully may cause a teen to clam up, but staying too subtle may mean the issue goes unaddressed. The NSPCC has come up with some further tips. Don't forget to seek help for yourself too. Young Minds is a charity that runs a free parents' helpline manned by trained advisors. It offers advice to anyone worried about a child or young person under the age of 25. They can be contacted on 0808 802 5544. It also has an online parents' survival guide, which provides information about some common mental health conditions, how children and young people can cope, and where parents can go to get help. The NSPCC helpline is on 0808 800 5000 and is also available to parents and guardians for advice. Don't forget to talk to healthcare professionals. Speak to your GP if you have concerns. It might be that a young person could benefit from professional support, including counselling. Here are some useful websites and helplines. Mind, open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on 0300 123 3393. Samaritans offers a listening service which is open 24 hours a day on 116 123. And this number is free to call and will not appear on your phone bill. The Mix is a free support service for people under 25. Call 0808 808 4994 or email help at themix.org.uk. Where do you stand on climate change? Climate change is linked with increased suicide rates as extreme heat profoundly affects the human mind. The thousands of additional suicides that are likely to occur as a result of unmitigated climate change are not just a number, they represent tragic losses for families across the country. Climate change is likely to cause thousands of additional suicides in coming decades as the Earth's temperature soars, according to a new study. Global warming has already been implicated in the spread of diseases, ranging from malaria to heart attacks, but its impact on mental health is less clear-cut. Researchers examining the implications of a warming world for public health have found a worrying link between rising temperatures and declining mental health. We've been studying the effects of warming on conflict and violence for years, finding that people fight more when it's hot, said Professor Solomon Siang, a study co-author based at the University of California. It appears that the heat profoundly affects the human mind and how we decide to inflict harm. Now that's an interesting thought. In their study, published in the journal Nature Climate Change, the research team charted historical temperatures and suicide data from vast swathes of the US and Mexico over several decades. They found that across the countries and municipalities they studied, a 1 Celsius boost in monthly average temperatures coincided with suicide spikes of almost 1% in the US and 2.1% in Mexico. Using this information, the scientists then employed data from climate models to calculate the impact a warmer world will have on future mental well-being. They found that by 2050, suicide rates are set to increase by 1.4% in the US and 2.3% in Mexico. This effect, which amounts to an additional 21,000 deaths throughout the region, is roughly equivalent to the impact of an economic recession on suicide rates. To support their conclusions, the scientists found that higher monthly temperatures were also associated with an increased use of depressive language, such as lonely and suicidal, on social media. These effects did not differ based on either how rich the local populations were or how used to warm weather they were. Suicide is one of the leading causes of death globally, and suicide rates in the US have risen dramatically over the past 15 years. So better understanding the causes of suicide is a public health priority, said Professor Marshall Burke, who led the research at Stanford University. Professor Burke emphasised that hotter temperatures are clearly not the only nor the most important risk factor for suicide. Other studies have found factors like upticks in unemployment and celebrity suicides can lead to increased suicide rates, while suicide prevention programmes and gun restriction laws can have the opposite effect. While temperature by itself is not thought to be a motivator for suicide, the researchers were concerned that it could exacerbate other problems and increase the likelihood that people attempt to harm themselves. However, Professor Burke noted that the surprisingly large impact climate change appears to have on suicide risk should be taken into account. This matters for both our understanding of mental health, as well as for what we should expect as temperatures continue to warm, he said. When talking about climate change, it's often easy to think in abstractions. But thousands of additional suicides that are likely to occur as a result of unmitigated climate change are not just a number. They represent tragic losses for families across the countries. If you're feeling suicidal, for confidential support, you can call the Samaritans on 116 123. You can also contact the following sites for confidential support: www.mind.org.uk, www.beatingeatingdisorders.org.uk, www.nhs.uk, and finally, www.mentalhealth.org.uk. You're listening to UK Health Radio. I'm Duncan, and this is the Therapy Suite. There's plenty more for you on the UK Health Radio website, including access to a wide variety of shows and topics. You can listen to them on demand, wherever and whenever you choose to. But don't keep this to yourself. Spread the word and let your friends and family know how good UK Health Radio really is. Depression and anxiety during pregnancy is more common among young women today than their mothers. Rising depression in today's young mothers may be linked to changing work roles and feelings that career or personal ambitions might now be harder to reach, researchers have said. Young women are 51% more likely than their mothers to experience depression and anxiety during pregnancy, a new study has suggested. A unique project followed women during their pregnancy in the 1990s, and now their daughters, as they become mothers, has unearthed the worrying increase in mental health problems between the generations. One quarter of women who became pregnant before the age of 24 exhibit high depressive symptoms compared to 17% in the original group, the team from the University of Bristol have found. The authors said this could be because more women are now in work than 25 years ago and may have concerns about how pregnancy will affect this or their personal life. Understanding these factors is vital because depression in pregnancy can have a significant impact on both mother and child. It's driven by a particular cluster of issues: feeling overwhelmed, not being able to sleep, things getting on top of you, and stress, Dr. Rebecca Pearson told The Independent. If we think what's changed, she said, the female workforce has increased in the past 25 years, and there are two elements relevant to mental health. One is young women's aspirations and ambitions, and whether that becomes trickier to achieve by becoming pregnant. The other one is of practicality of having to go to work, the physical and mental exhaustion of having to work whilst pregnant. There are also financial pressures caused by the rises in house prices and costs of living, she added. The findings show that issues of low mood and sadness, which are key parts in clinical depression, are relatively stable, but anxiety disorders are becoming much more common and can still affect both mother and child. Dr. Pearson added, our findings suggest this rise and what women are feeling is much more in the domain of anxiety and stress. Women are not coming forward because they don't identify with the more depressed side, and they're not coming forward for help. Given that depression in pregnancy has substantial impact on both mother and child, this is of key importance for the health services, she said. The findings are drawn from the Bristol Children of the 1990s longitudinal study and is thought to be the only study in the world to have identically tested women across two generations. Using responses from 2,390 of the original women who were recruited in the study, they compared them with 180 of their daughters or sons' partners who became pregnant by the age of 24 between 2012 and 2016, and found that having high depressive symptoms was 51% more common in the current generation. If their mothers were depressed in pregnancy, daughters were also more than three times likely to be depressed in their pregnancy. The Bristol team said this marks the beginnings of a new wave of health and social policy research that will soon have data from three generations. Head cameras have been given to the current group of young mothers to film how they interact with their children and get more clues about their mental well-being. Claire Dolman, vice chairwoman of the Maternal Mental Health Alliance, said, this is an important piece of research from the University of Bristol on depression in pregnancy, showing that rates of depression have risen within a generation. She goes on to say, it is vital now to go further and look at the possible causes of this increase to help devise interventions to break the intergenerational cycle. A really interesting story, that. I hope you'll agree. So how much fibre do you think you have during the day? It's been revealed that a high fibre diet may help relieve stress and anxiety. Fibre is a stress beater, said The Sun this week. Whilst The Mail Online says high fibre diets may make you less stressed because your gut affects your brain. Both reported on a study that explored whether eating more fibre might help the body to combat stress. What do you think about this? The researchers were particularly interested in the potential role of short-chain fatty acids. These are the small molecules produced when the digestive system breaks down high-fibre foods, such as fruits and vegetables. They're known to have the beneficial effect on biological processes such as the metabolism and immune system. So, the researchers wanted to see if these effects could also relieve stress. An important limitation to flag up is that the research was done with mice and not people. They did find evidence that mice given supplements to mimic a high-fibre diet did in fact express fewer signs of stress and had a healthier functioning gut. But this is a long way from proving a similar effect in people. Eating the recommended amount of fibre can bring a range of benefits, such as reducing your risk of diseases, including bowel cancer. But based on the strength of evidence presented in this study, we cannot add stress busting to the list, just yet at least. Stress is a common health problem experienced by most people at some time in their lives. There are more obvious ways to deal with stress rather than making changes to your diet. You could read more about tackling stress online. The study was carried out by researchers from the University College Cork. The study was funded by the Science Foundation Ireland, and some of the authors received additional funding from food and pharmaceutical companies. However, there may be a conflict of interest here, given it is within the company's interest to find reasons to promote food supplements. The Mail Online focused its report on the study on high-fibre diets, possibly reducing leaky guts. No, really, that is a thing. And by reducing leaky guts, therefore reducing stress. Leaky gut syndrome refers to a hypothesis that many symptoms and conditions such as migraine and chronic fatigue syndrome are caused by the immune system reacting to germs, toxins, or other substances that have been absorbed into the bloodstream via porous or leaky bowel. Whilst it's true that some conditions and medications can cause leaky guts, there is currently little evidence to support the theory that porous bowel is the direct cause of any serious health conditions. If the lining of the gut becomes more porous, this could lead to bacteria and toxins leaking through and being absorbed into the bloodstream. An additional controversial hypothesis is this leakage could lead to inflammation and a range of illnesses, potentially including stress. However, this remains unproven. The researchers state these results present novel insights into mechanisms underpinning the influence of the gut microbiota on the brain and stress-related disorders. Most people do not eat enough fibre, so eating the recommended amount is a good idea, but there is no guarantee that doing so will lower your stress level. There is also many other, more obvious things you can do to manage stress. If you're stressed, whether by your job or something more personal, the first step to feeling better is to identify the cause. The most unhelpful thing you can do is turn to something unhealthy to help you cope, such as smoking or drinking. In life, there's always a solution to a problem, says Professor Carrie Cooper, an occupational health expert at the University of Lancaster. Not taking control of the situation and doing nothing will only make your problems worse. He says, the keys to good stress management are building emotional strength, being in control of your situation, having good social networks, and adopting a positive outlook. So let's look at Professor Cooper's top 10 stress-busting suggestions. Be active. Exercise won't make your stress disappear, but it will reduce some of the emotional intensity that you're feeling, clearing your thoughts and letting you deal with your problems more calmly. Take control. There's a solution to any problem. If you remain passive, thinking, I can't do anything about this problem, your stress will only get worse. The feeling of a loss of control is one of the main causes of stress and lack of well-being, according to Professor Cooper. The act of taking control is in itself empowering, and it's a crucial part of finding a solution that satisfies you and not someone else. Connect with people. A good support network of colleagues, friends, and family can ease your work troubles and help you see things in a different way. If you don't connect with people, you won't have support to turn to when you need help, says Professor Cooper. The activities we do with friends help us relax. We often have a good laugh with them, which is an excellent stress reliever. Professor Cooper says, talking things through with a friend will also help you find solutions to your problems. Have some me time. Here in the UK, we work the longest hours in Europe, meaning we don't often spend enough time doing things we really enjoy. We all need to take some time for socialising, relaxation, or exercise, says Professor Cooper. He recommends setting aside a couple of nights a week for some quality me time away from work. By earmarking those 2 days, it means you won't be tempted to work overtime, he says. Challenge yourself. Setting yourself goals and challenges, whether at work or outside, such as learning a new language or sport, helps to build confidence, and this will help you deal with stress. By continuing to learn, you become more emotionally resilient as a person, says Professor Cooper. It arms you with knowledge and makes you want to do things rather than be passive, such as watching TV all the time. Don't forget to avoid unhealthy habits. Don't rely on alcohol, smoking, and caffeine as your ways of coping. Men more than women are likely to do this, and we call this avoidance behaviour. Women are better at seeking support from their social circle, says Professor Cooper. Over the long term, these crutches won't solve your problems, they'll just create new ones. It's like putting your head in the sand, says Professor Cooper. It might provide temporary relief, but it won't make the problems disappear. You need to tackle the cause of your stress. Help other people. Professor Cooper says evidence shows that people who help others through activities such as volunteering or community work become more resilient. Helping people who are often in situations worse than yours will help you put your problems into perspective, he says. The more you give, the more resilient and happy you'll feel. If you don't have time to volunteer, try to do someone a favour every day of the week. It can be something as small as helping someone to cross the road or going on a coffee run for colleagues. Work smarter, not harder. Working smarter means prioritising your work, concentrating on the tasks that will make a real difference. Leave the least important tasks to the last, says Cooper. Accept that your in-tray will always be full. Don't expect it to be empty at the end of the day. Try to be positive. Look for the positives in life and things for which you're grateful. People don't always appreciate what they have, says Professor Cooper. Try to be glass half full instead of glass half empty, he suggests. Try writing down 3 things that went well or for which you're grateful at the end of every day. Listen to an audio guide on beating unhelpful thinking and accept things you can't change. Changing a difficult situation isn't always possible. Try to concentrate on the things you do have control over. If your company is going under and is making redundancies, for example, there's nothing you can do about it, says Professor Cooper. In a situation like that, you need to focus on the things you can control, such as looking for a new job.
Fixing up a car, driving it again, searching for the water, hoping for the rain, up and up, up and up. Down upon the canvas, working in a meal, waiting for a chance to pick an Irish field. Up and up, up and up. See a bird form a diamond in a rough. See a bird soaring high, but the flood is in your blood. It's in your blood. Underneath the storm, an umbrella is saying, sitting with the boys, it takes away the pain. Up and up, up and up, saying,
we're gonna get it together right now. We're gonna get it together somehow. We're gonna get it together and fly. Oh, we're gonna get it together right now. We're gonna get it together and flow. We're gonna get it together and go.
Up and up and up. Lying in the gutter, aiming for the moon.
Don't ever give up.
Before we move on, if you have a mental health story to tell, whether it's your journey or someone close to you, or if you run a mental health project, do get in touch either on Twitter at Duncan_Ellison or email duncan@thinkduncan.com. Raising a family can be exhausting both mentally and physically. So how do you make time to look after your own health when all the hours of the day are already fully booked? Parents neglecting their well-being do so at their peril, as numerous studies have shown there are real-world implications. For one thing, mums with larger families are more likely to have a heart attack, and Cambridge University researchers believe this is due in part to the stress of looking after children. Mums and dads are busy people, and it's understandable that it can be hard to fit in looking after themselves with so many other commitments. But looking after children can be stressful, so it's important not to neglect yourself, says Julie Ward, senior cardiac nurse at the British Heart Foundation. Kelly Bath, who has two children aged 8 and 11, said, "I used to work in London, and like many others, I get up at the crack of dawn and in the dark, travel on a packed train straight to a desk where I worked solidly for 10 hours before returning home in the dark. That was no way to live." When Kelly first started her own business in 2015, she ran herself ragged. And that's her own words. Trying to strike a work-life balance. She said, "I don't believe you'll ever have enough time in the day to get everything done. So the key is to accept that and stop stressing about it," she said. "Stop trying to be Superwoman. Grant yourself some me time and don't feel guilty about it." Now she schedules an hour into her day, at least 30 minutes as soon as she gets home from the school run, and the rest when she can fit it in, often in the morning before work, to focus on something that clears her mind. Be that exercise, meditation, reading, or simply walking the dog. If your instant reaction is, "I can't, it's not realistic for me to fit that in," then you are the only ones stopping you from that happening, she says. "I now prioritise me time at the beginning of my day just before work. I get as much work done as I did before, but feel calmer, happier and clearer minded. I get as much done as I did before." Similarly to Kelly, Sophie Bauer, who has two children aged 5 and 7, makes time during her day to have an hour and a half to herself, which she admits sounds like a long time when you've got children vying for your attention. For Sophie, this means she chooses to get up at 5:30 in the morning on weekdays. "This is before the children wake up. I try to do some exercise, nothing hardcore, to help me focus and to breathe. I also try not to look at my phone for a couple of hours in the morning," she says. Hannah Goldstone and her husband Jonathan, who have two children under 10 and a dog, both make time in their schedules for exercise and help the other fit in. She says, "He goes to karate 3 times a week, training and teaching. I meditate every day at home and do yoga. It was very difficult initially, but we persisted. Committing to an exercise program can seem like a lot to take on, but Julie Ward from the British Heart Foundation says just 20 to 30 minutes of exercise per day will make a big difference. This can be anything that increases your heart rate and makes you breathe a little faster. Committing to an exercise program can seem like a lot to take on, but Julie Ward from the British Heart Foundation says just 20 to 30 minutes of exercise per day will make a big difference. She says, "This can be anything that increases your heart rate and makes you breathe a little faster, so you don't need to join a gym or run 5K every day of the week. You can break it down into 10-minute sessions throughout the day and build it up from there," she says. "You can do it from the comfort of your own living room, but be realistic about your goals. Remember, everyday activities count, so look for opportunities to be active. For example, use the stairs instead of the escalators. Walk the kids to school or get off the bus a stop early. Even do some stretches when watching television. Kira O'Mara, a single mum of an 8-year-old daughter and an 11-year-old son, says, "The simple act of making a drink can be done in a way to make it feel like a breather in an otherwise hectic day. Although taking time to do sport is beneficial, there are other small changes you can make to your daily life that will also be beneficial to your mental health." Nicola Ray Wickham from London, who has a 4-year-old, says that she doesn't have to find time in the day to do something additional to look after herself. Instead, she just takes something simple like a cup of coffee as a moment for self-care. "I reframe the everyday by adding mindfulness and gratitude to it," says Nicola. "So instead of just a coffee, I'll use my favourite cup and really enjoy the process of making it, even if it's just a few moments. Similarly, a bath at the end of the day is made better by really appreciating it. For me, it's about making an occasion out of the small things." And Kira O'Mara says, "Every morning, I make sure I wake before my children, sit and have a coffee in bed and meditate for 5 to 10 minutes, then exercise for 20 minutes. It's the perfect start to my day." Kat Cohen, who has 2 daughters, aged 7 and 14, said that even taking a shower can be a chance for self-care. "I always use a body wash with citrus notes in it to further boost my energy and focus me. This ritual makes me feel like I'm taking really good care of myself and simply relaxes me." Really interesting words there. It's all about whatever works for you. It's important that both you and your partner find a way to prioritise your mental health. Try to take some time on your own by maintaining involvement in hobbies, exercise, or social activities. So step back, take a look at your life, readdress your schedule, and make sure you give yourself some you time.
All my love is yours, all my time is ours, all my reckless dreams and all my restless hours. No matter where you go, baby, I'll be there. No matter where you go, baby, I'll be there. I'll be there. All my love is yours, all my time is ours, all my reckless dreams, all my restless hours, all my mind, all my mind, love, all my mind, all my mind, love, and all those setting suns and all those rising moons from the eye. Full tower to those deep lagoons. No matter where you go, baby, I'll be there. No matter where you go, baby, I'll be there. I'll be there. All my love is yours, all my time is ours, all my reckless dreams, all my restless hours.
Read this month's edition of UK Health Radio's very own magazine? If not, head over to www.ukhealthradio.com and check out the great features, stories and ideas the magazine has to offer. I'm delighted to welcome back Panita Singh to share her views on the therapy suite. Panita, welcome back.
Hi everyone, Panita here again. I have come up with a new mantra. S is for SOS, or save our souls, and it is not for suicide. Today I'll be sharing my thoughts on how we can flip S for suicide to S for SOS. 87% of individuals who die by suicide have a mental illness. Isn't that frightening? According to WHO, suicide accounted for 1.4% of all deaths worldwide, making it the 17th leading cause of death in 2015. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention estimates that for each person who dies from suicide, 25 more make a suicide attempt. While suicidal behaviors are more common in females in developed countries, completed suicide is 3.5 times more common in males. Not too long ago, a friend of mine told me that she has had suicidal ideation since her teens. Whenever someone says something even remotely close to this, you must always take it seriously. I went to meet her and asked her head-on what exactly was going on. She hadn't even told her family members about it. She then showed me a deep cut near her wrist. We talked and I empathized and listened non-judgmentally, which is key. By the end of the discussion, she felt slightly better and hopeful. Before leaving, I made her promise me that she would seek professional help and that we would send each other a message every day to see if the other person is well and alive. We are doing that till date. A few months ago, I myself started to have suicidal tendencies. I wrote to a close friend at that time, hoping she could help me. But she shut me out and said she didn't have time for me. That's the worst thing anyone can do at that moment, because what ensued was a severe panic attack and me locking myself in the bathroom, looking for something sharp to cut myself with. Luckily, my parents barged in and calmed me down. That day was an eye-opener. I used it as an opportunity to see which individuals would be there for me, and so wrote to a few people about my episode. The response is interesting. Friends who I thought were closest to me couldn't be there for me the way I'd hoped for. But on the other hand, friends who I thought weren't very close replied immediately. My aunt, who is miles away from me, asked if I wanted her to fly down, which she did, by the way, as a surprise. My yoga instructor and my psychiatrist also said, "Don't lose hope, Panita." I felt reassured that I do have some people I can reach out to. My advice to individuals who have suicidal ideations is to make a list of people they can rely on when they are in crisis. I certainly have. With suicide rates rising and an alarming number of teens and young adults at serious risk of suicide, researchers at the National Institute of Mental Health recently came up with the ASQ toolkit, which is Ask Suicide Screening Questions. It is a four-question survey for health professionals to help identify and get help for at-risk youth. According to an NIMH study, a yes response to one or more of the four questions identified 97% of youth aged 10 to 21 years at risk for suicide. It's a red flag for medical professionals, and from there, the toolkit offers guidance on the next steps. For more information, check out the NIMH homepage. The above toolkit is for healthcare practitioners, but as a member of the community, you can help as well. In order to recognize and help individuals suffering from mental health issues, Betty Kitchener and her husband, Professor John, developed the Mental Health First Aid Program in the year 2000 in Australia. Mental Health First Aid is a training program that teaches the public how to recognize and help individuals who may be developing a mental health problem, experiencing a worsening of an existing issue, or may be in crisis. It focuses on teaching members how to offer initial support until appropriate professional help is received or until the crisis resolves. I just completed the course myself and I'm officially a mental health first aider. It was an amazing experience, to say the least. I was in a room full of people from different walks of life who wanted to learn how to help family members and other individuals with mental ailments. It was unbelievable that so many people were and are willing to learn and help others in this field. If you can, I encourage all of you to do this course. It will definitely change your perspective about mental health. The takeaway message is, always take suicidal threats seriously. Mostly attempts to die by suicide are a cry for help. That's why I believe S is not for suicide, but for SOS. Ask the person directly about their suicidal ideations, and the question should be unambiguous. For example, are you having thoughts of suicide, or are you thinking of killing yourself? Appear confident, as your body language instills reassurance. Work collaboratively to keep the individual safe, and then connect with other professional help. Learn how to empathize with the individual, and please do not shut these people out. Do not underestimate your abilities to help a suicidal person. However, if you are unable to help for whatever said reason, please help them find someone who can. Some suicide prevention resources are suicide.org, Suicide Prevention Resource Center, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. If you would like to share an experience with me, you can message me on Twitter at Parnita Singh or write to me through my website, https://parnetascorner.wixsite.com/mindovermatter. Take care of yourselves and your loved ones. Sending good vibes. This is Parnita Singh.
Parnita, it's always a pleasure. We look forward to more of your thoughts next time. I've got a reflective wise words this week. See what you think to this. Whilst no one can go back and make a new beginning, anyone can start over and make a new ending. Don't forget, if you do have a mental health concern or have been affected by anything raised on today's programme, please consult your GP or find a counselling service to talk to. You've been listening to The Therapy Suite with me, Duncan Ellison, only on UK Health Radio. Stay well, keep smiling, see you next time.